This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be reviewing last night's Champions League action. We've just got one game week to go in a couple of weeks' time. So we'll be talking all things Champions League, getting a bit more reaction on Chelsea's draw over in Valencia and Liverpool's draw at home against Napoli. We'll also be looking ahead to tonight's Europa League action, some rather interesting start times all around Europe. Manchester United will be playing a very young team over in Astana. Arsenal at home to Eintracht Frankfurt, with questions continuing over the future of Unai Emery. And could the man that could replace Unai Emery at Arsenal, he leads his side, Wolves, over to Sporting Braga. That is Nuno Espirito Santo. We'll be talking more about that later in the hour. Can Wolves keep hold of him? Goalkeeper Rui Patricio has said he wants to keep hold of him. The number 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp here on the Premier League Fan Show, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. So let's look back at last night's Champions League fixtures. Two English sides in action, starting off with Liverpool in Group E. Liverpool were held 1-1 by Napoli. Napoli may have some pretty significant off-field issues, but a solid defensive performance by Napoli meant that they got 1 point away at Liverpool. Napoli took the lead from Dries Mertens in the first half. That was just after Fabinho had been substituted with what looked like an ankle injury. Dejan Lovren equalised halfway through the second half, but Liverpool could only secure a point from the game, which means that Liverpool need a point in Salzburg in a couple of weeks' time to secure qualification. Talking of Salzburg, they won 4-1 away at Genk, who were already eliminated. Erling Haaland becoming the first teenager to score in 5 successive Champions League games. His price tag is only seemingly going to increase. The other English side in action, Chelsea, they were away in Spain at Valencia. Despite going 1-0 down, Chelsea fought back through Mateo Kovacic, his first goal for Chelsea on his 71st appearance. He equalised just a minute after Carlos Soler had given Valencia the lead. Christian Pulisic then scored in the second half to give Chelsea a 2-1 lead. Valencia kept pushing and pushing and pushing, perhaps should have scored more than they actually did. But Daniel Vaz scored a rather fortuitous cross. It was a pretty good goal, but I don't think he really meant it. To meant that it finished 2-2 there. The other game in that group, Lille, who are pretty much out, well, they were out before last night and only have 1 point. They lost 2-0 at home against Ajax, which means in Group H, Ajax are top on 10 points. Valencia in second on 8, Chelsea in third on 8. Chelsea are at home against Lille in their final game. A win for Chelsea will guarantee qualification. The significance of Valencia not scoring again and winning that game is, in theory, had Valencia won last night, even though I don't think Chelsea would be particularly happy to hear this, Valencia and Ajax could have come to some sort of agreement to draw the game, because that would have seen both sides through and would have knocked Chelsea out. But if Chelsea win, which you'd assume against a Lille side that will have nothing to play for, Chelsea will probably win and go through to the knockout stages. There were some concerns with Tammy Abraham being stretched off with what looked like a pretty serious hip injury, but Frank Lampard seems to suggest that maybe it wasn't as bad as first feared. In Group F, Barcelona won 3-1 at home against Borussia Dortmund. We talked about yesterday. It was Lionel Messi's 700th appearance for Barcelona. Well, he goes and scores a 613th goal, his 114th in the competition. He's 381 goals, I think it is, ahead of second, which is Cesar Rodriguez, who was playing during the 40s and 50s for Barcelona. But a pretty significant moment. You just knew that on his 700th appearance, having scored a ludicrous number of goals, that Messi was going to score again. There was a goal off the bench for Jadon Sancho, despite the fact his future's up in the air. Pretty good strike from just outside the penalty area. It wasn't enough for Dortmund to get anything from the game, and it leaves it finally poised between Dortmund and Inter Milan as to who's going to qualify second in Group F. Inter Milan won 3-1 over in Slavia Prague. And in Group G, Zenit St. Petersburg won 2-0 at home against Lyon. and RB Leipzig drew 2-2 with Benfica. So let's concentrate more on the English side. Before we do that, let's just have a look at all of how the games this week, obviously on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, leave the group. So in Group A, this is going back to Tuesday night, Paris Saint-Germain have sealed top spot. They've won 4 out of 5. Real Madrid are second and qualified on 8 points. In Group B, again, the top two are secured. Bayern Munich will finish top. They've won 5 from 5 so far. Tottenham on 10 points. They will go through as well. In Group C, Manchester City, and despite back-to-back draws, they've guaranteed top spot. They go through on 11 points. And it's up to Shakhtar Dynamo and Atalanta, who are only divided by a couple of points, to decide the fate of how that goes. In Group D, Juventus are sealed top spot, 13 points out of a possible 15. Atletico Madrid, though, after back-to-back defeats, need to make sure that they do a good job against Leverkusen in a couple of weeks. Just 1 point separate those two sides. Then into last night's action, Group E with Liverpool. They are top on 10 points. Napoli are second on 9. Salzburg on 7. So Liverpool know just a point is needed in Salzburg to seal qualification, but a win is the only way of guaranteeing top spot. Group F, Barcelona are top. They will go through as the group winners. They're on 11 points. Inter Milan and Borussia Dortmund, both on 7 points, so still so finely poised. In Group G, RB Leipzig are on 10 points. Zenit and Lyon both on 7, so still finely poised in that group. It's seemingly all really the bottom four groups, the ones from last night that are still to be decided. In Group H, Ajax are on 10. They top that group so far. Valencia and Chelsea both on 8. Valencia play Ajax. Chelsea host Lille on the final game. So let's concentrate on the English clubs. For Liverpool, a frustrating night at Anfield. It seemed like quite a subdued atmosphere. It wasn't a typical Liverpool performance, actually. It lacked energy, it lacked intensity, it lacked any real momentum from early doors. What's emblematic of a great Liverpool performance is coming out of the block so quickly, and it was a really flat evening, to be honest. And the first 25 minutes summed it up. Fabinho going off injured, and anyone that's seen Fabinho over the last 12 months knows how phenomenal he's been. He's one of the best holding midfielders in world football at the moment. He's been brilliant over the last year. And he had to go off quite early on. He tried to play on after suffering an ankle injury, but eventually was forced off, wasn't comfortable. And Jurgen Klopp was forced to take him off. Wasn't too optimistic about the injury after the game. We're just going to have to wait and see. He was seen in a protective boot today. We're just going to have to wait and see as to how the scans come through. Hopefully, for us Liverpool fans, it's nothing too serious, because he really has been fantastic. One of the first names on the team sheet. As I said, it was a very flat performance as a whole, really, across the 90 minutes, and it took Liverpool 60 minutes to really get going, and Napoli took the lead inside the opening 25 minutes in rather controversial circumstances through Dries Mertens. Now, there was nothing, he was checked for offside, but as VAR decided, it was onside, and it was a very good finish. But the actual debate for me is surrounding in the build-up to it, which involves Dries Mertens, that involves him running into and fouling Virgil van Dijk merely 24 hours previous to this game at the Santiago Bernabeu. PSG had been given a penalty and a red card. Now, in the build-up to that, Idrissa Gana Gueye had pretty much just was breathing on Marcelo, the smallest of touches, and yet that was given a free kick. Now, what happened in yesterday's game was Dries Mertens had no intention of getting the ball, because he knew he wasn't going to win the header against Virgil van Dijk. So instead of trying to actually win the ball, he just runs into the side of van Dijk, just quite clearly fouls him with no intention of getting the ball. He therefore not only fouls him, and therefore the header is not a proper header because he's being fouled, but also it takes van Dijk out of the game. And there's no coincidence then the space is where van Dijk would have been. VAR checks it and doesn't overturn it. I mean, this is what frustrates sports fans as a whole, is an inconsistency with referees, that one day a decision is made, then the next day that a decision is made completely the opposite way. And I really don't get it. And in the second half, and as I said, people shouldn't mistake the fact that based on our performance last night, do we deserve a win? No, we didn't. That I thought a draw was probably a fair result. We didn't really deserve anything more than that, because the performance itself was slow. It was lethargic. The number of times we were passing it side to side, Napoli were so well organised defensively, so well set up. And when you're playing against a side as well disciplined as a Carlo Ancelotti side, you have to move the ball quickly. You can't move the ball side to side. I'm a massive supporter of Jordan Henderson, and I get annoyed with all the stick. Last night, he was awful. He was just constantly passing the ball backwards, taking the energy out of attacks. And when you're playing against good sides that are well set up defensively, you have to move the ball with pace. You can't break sides down like that if you're moving slowly around. However, second half, Liverpool should have had a penalty absolutely every day of the week. And a lot of people criticise Mo Salah for going down easily and saying he's far too theatrical, he goes down far too softly. Well, I'll tell you the reason why he goes down softly is the only reason you get penalties in this day and age is by going down. There is no room for honesty in football. Kalidou Koulibaly rugby tackles him. It is ridiculous. Manhandling Mo Salah, who's fighting him off, showing strength, but he's being fouled. But because Mo Salah stays on his feet and doesn't score, the referee is just blind to it and just moves on. That's why players go down. It may be that Mo Salah goes down theatrically quite a lot, but there's a good reason for that. The only reason you get a penalty is by going down. That we've seen it so often over the last couple of years. People slate footballers for making them look like they've been just shot by a shotgun. There's a good reason why people are doing that, is because that's the only way of successfully winning a penalty. If you stay on your feet, referees don't award fouls. If referees would be able to say, OK, play advantage, but I'm going to go back to that, players, I assure you, it's not brain surgery. It's pretty obvious. Players would stay on their feet if they knew they'd be given a penalty. And I cannot quite believe how, with VAR as well, it just shows actually that the circus that is our VAR in this country isn't just solely focused in this country. It's all around Europe. How can a referee and a person in the VAR look at that and think, I tell you what, he's playing a different sport, playing rugby, but I tell you what, we'll just allow that to continue. It just baffles me, really. As I said, though, it shouldn't detract away, even though I was frustrated with a few of those decisions, it shouldn't detract away from the fact that Liverpool, a bit like Manchester City 24 hours previous to that, were lethargic. It was a laboured performance. I thought, everyone knows me, knows how big a fan, how much I love Jurgen Klopp, but he got his team selection wrong. And I said that from the moment I heard the team news, that Trent Alexander-Arnold should have been starting at right back. This was not the time to be resting him. The time to be resting was winning last night and then being guaranteed top spot in 2 weeks' time in Salzburg. That's the time to rest him. I'm not having a go at Joe Gomez because he's a player with a bright future, but he's a centre-back, and Trent Alexander-Arnold is a phenomenal player that gives so much, is such an important player in this Liverpool team, the creativity he brings down the right-hand side. So he got that wrong. And also James Milner, he got that wrong. If it was away at Manchester City, I'd be fully behind playing James Milner being a more solid defensive option in midfield. This was the perfect time to be playing Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. He's in great form, scoring goals, adds that drive from midfield. That's what Liverpool needed last night. They knew they were going to have a lot of possession. They knew that Napoli were going to be well set defensively. That was the time to play someone like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, not James Milner. So I felt like Jurgen Klopp got his team selection wrong. And even though there were a few decisions that went against Liverpool last night, it doesn't detract away from the fact that Liverpool's performance wasn't very good last night, and they didn't really deserve anything more than a point. And it does mean, frustratingly, that we need to go to Salzburg and get at least a point. Now, I'd fully back us, and I'm very confident that we will do, but it just means there's that added pressure. And also, in a very busy period, it could have been a great opportunity to make a lot of changes and rest a lot of players. Instead, Liverpool know that they have to get at least a point in Salzburg, and also they have to make sure they win to guarantee top spot, which could be crucial going forward. So a frustrating draw for Liverpool last night at home against Napoli. A special guest was there in the form of South Africa rugby captain Siya Kolisi. He was a special guest at Anfield, so great to see him there. Unfortunately, not to see all 3 points, but Liverpool still in a decent position, and knowing that a win in Salzburg in a couple of weeks will still seal top spot in Group E, but still a frustrating night at Anfield. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We're going to be continuing to look back at last night's Champions action and talk about Chelsea's draw over in Valencia. Love Sport. This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number to share your views on your Premier League club. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking more about last night's Champions League action. We talked about Liverpool's frustrating and laboured 1-1 draw at home against Napoli last night. Also in Champions League action last night with Chelsea in Group H, they made the trip over to Spain. They were playing Valencia, a team that they lost to in the opening game week of this season's Champions League group stages. As I mentioned, Chelsea did go 1-0 down, but responded in pretty good style through Mateo Kovacic and Christian Pulisic before Daniel Vaz scored late on for Valencia to secure a point for both sides. Realistically, Valencia, though, could have had even more. They should really have had even more. If you think Dani Parejo missed a 65th minute penalty for Valencia, so it could have been worse for Chelsea. They could have been staring down the barrel, potentially, of a close to exit after last night's game. Slightly marred by the injury to Tammy Abraham, a win for Chelsea against Lille at home in the final game will guarantee qualification. Earlier on the Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by the former Chelsea winger Clive Walker, and let's hear what he had to say on last night's draw at Valencia.
The amount of opportunities that we gave away, I guess, in many respects, to Valencia. Gilt-edge opportunities, and we often talk about the half chances that teams have, and sometimes they take them, sometimes they don't. But the big, big chances that Valencia had, you'd have to say they should have maybe put us to bed in the early stages. So I think from that aspect, I think you'd be grateful for a draw. Having said that, of course, being 2-1 to the good with the clock ticking down, you wanted to feel you could get away with pinching a win, as it were, and taking the 3 points. But, you know, a free goal and all of a sudden it's 2-2.
Yeah, just on that, because we had a bit of a conversation earlier, and obviously being part of the goalkeepers' union, I had my opinion on that. But I know that he got a little bit of stick, and obviously this was after him saving a great penalty earlier in the game as well. But what did you and Chelsea fans make of that particular goal?
I've said it's a free goal for me. Having been a winger as well, Richard, you know about that, that you get in wide areas and you just try and hit the ball into a certain place where you hope someone's going to get on the end of it. He's got too much on it, basically, and it's coming with too much pace. But on the top of that, it's also dipped over the top of Kepa to a certain degree. And I think he's probably felt that this was going wide or even over the bar. And it was one of those things, just a freak goal for me. And Valencia, I think, a little bit lucky to get that.
Yeah, indeed. And just going back to the Chelsea performance in general, one worrying moment was, of course, Tammy Abraham going down with an injury. We're not too sure of the severity of it just yet. But again, he looked dangerous up front, had a great chance, great save, actually, from the goalkeeper. Very clever finish that he had in the first half. But this will be a concern for Chelsea, certainly after the start he's had this season, if it were to be a long-term injury.
Well, it would be a problem. I mean, yeah, the chance he had, Silasen makes an absolutely miraculous save. And I thought at that stage, you know, Chelsea had scored, it might have just turned the game around a little bit. Yeah, I mean, Tammy's been terrific this season. I think always you rely sometimes on a target man that plays in the way he does. I mean, he's a big lad. He's able to keep the ball and link the play at times. He needs to improve on it. Of course, he's only a youngster, but you know, he is good at that, but he can score goals as we've seen. So it would be a big loss if he's out for a long time. I tend to feel, though, the injury, when I saw it first happen, I thought he sort of didn't grimace too much, but it got worse as he walked around the pitch. And I think when he finally stopped and couldn't walk anymore, obviously the stiffness of landing on another player, maybe a bruising of the hip, hopefully that's all it is, and it shouldn't take too long to recover from.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a couple of players I want to touch on, Kovacic and Jorginho. Two players who got a little bit of stick last season, certainly Jorginho under Sarri, but a couple of players that are flourishing this season.
Well, Jorginho, I thought towards the end of last season, started to improve. I think it took him a long time to get used to the Premier League, but also from the information he was getting from Maurizio Sarri, I think there was a conflict in his head, because obviously where he'd come from, the league is different, and I think he tried to apply those techniques that he played abroad rather than playing here in England. So I think towards the end of last season, I thought Jorginho got better, and I think he went on from that this season. Maybe felt a little bit easier in the style and got used to the Premier League. I mean, Kovacic, on the other hand, is a revelation. You know, I thought he was average, I thought, last season, but this season, he's been absolutely terrific. So having signed a contract, maybe that's helped him. He feels more relaxed, more comfortable, and he's able now to produce the things that he's showing us. But he's a most important player at the moment in the middle of our midfield.
And going into the final game of the group stages, of course, they're in third at the moment, but I think they'd have taken this position knowing that they've got Lille at home. Of course, Lille only got 1 point, and a win for Chelsea will guarantee that they go through into the knockout stages. I'm sure most Chelsea fans would have taken this position at this point.
I think you would take it, but I think you'd like to think that if you can have a good run of results, you're obviously in a safer position. Mm. We always knew this was going to be a tough league, though, to get through the teams that we didn't quite know a lot about Lille, to be honest, but they've dropped away, so that's good. Valencia, as we saw last night, very, very good at home, always difficult to play against. And, of course, we lost to them at the beginning of the campaign. So, you know, these teams are not easy to beat. So, yeah, it's the good thing is it's in our hands and it's a home game against the team that are bottom, albeit, you know, they'll play for pride. So it's still a massive game for us and we really do need to win it.
Yeah, absolutely. Have Chelsea's fans' expectations changed a bit now? Has it gone from being a little bit of, you know, look, we'll see. It's a trial and error season. We've got this transfer ban. So now you've realised how good Frank Lampard is, how good this team is. Is there more expectation now to actually get some silverware, go deep into the Champions League and really kick on?
Well, I think if you'd have asked me that at the beginning of the season, I think there would have been a temporary lapse in the expectations of the fans because we've been brought up with Roman Abramovich over the last, 16, 17 years with winning things. I think there was an understanding of the fans that it was going to take time because obviously Frank with the embargo would have to bed the youngsters in. They've come on leaps and bounds and all credit to them and to Frank for introducing them. And they got better and better. And I think the fans now, it's beginning to grow again. You know, we're in a good position in the league. Champions League is always there for us to try and win again. So I think the expectancy is growing. But I think if you get to the end of the season, just retain a position in the Champions League, I think the Chelsea fans will take top four at the moment with a view to going on from that with the improvement of the youngsters and of course, the growing of age, really.
When this transfer ban is lifted, do you think that would you implore Roman Abramovich to not go out and spend big? Do you want him to just deal with what he's got, nurture this current side, or would you be happy to return to the days of, you know, trying to find the odd little kind of Galactico, as it were?
Well, I think I'd like to think a lot of this will be in Frank's and Jody Morris's hands because I think the way they've conducted themselves this season, they've proved their ability to bring players into a squad, make it a better squad. And I think there has to be a bit of trust there. I think some clubs do it a different way and maybe Chelsea have done it a different way in the past. But maybe the pitch is changing slightly and it will be in Frank's hands to choose the players he wants. Whether he will... I like to think with history as well that with Roman Abramovich, he's had the ability to purchase expensive players. And I think the choice then becomes Frank's, whether he has to go and buy them or not will be another thing.
That was the former Chelsea winger Clive Walker, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on The Breakfast Show. Remember, you can listen to Love Sport Breakfast every weekday morning between 6.30 and 10 a.m. They were talking about last night's game at the Mestalla, and it definitely felt like one that Chelsea got away with last night, that even though they drew, and it does mean that they have their fate in their own hands, a win against Lille at home will seal qualification for the knockout stages. It does feel like they were very, very fortunate. Danny Parejo, as I mentioned, missed a penalty, or it was saved by Kepa Arrizabalaga, depending on which way you want to put it. But they were definitely very, very fortunate to come away with a point. It could have very easily been a different story where they had lost last night and then they're staring down the barrel, potentially, if Valencia and Ajax drew on the final game week, then Chelsea would be heading out of the Champions League. So very, very fortunate. I think there has to obviously be some credit to the way that Frank Lampard has adjusted quite quickly to life at Chelsea and the fact they've won away at Ajax in this group stages, a team that got to the semi-finals of the Champions League last season. They've drawn away at Valencia. They've made a good start to the Premier League this season. So I think Frank Lampard's done a number of good things. However, I do get the sense that he's getting away with a few things that potentially a few other managers don't get away with. And the fact that I look at Chelsea and think, good attacking-wise, and even without Eden Hazard this season, they're still creating chances, they're still scoring goals. But I look at them defensively and think they are all over the place. They are there to be got at. They are vulnerable, they're fragile, they are frail. And again, they conceded two. It could have been more last night. And I get the sense that people are skirting over that. Frank Lampard, I think everyone likes Frank, and I think he comes across really, really well when he was working at BT or when he speaks in the media. He comes across really, really well, and I think is a, especially in footballing terms, an intelligent chap that's quite clearly got his head screwed on. However, I just get the feeling that if it were another manager, I think some of the flaws would be pointed out a little bit more. He's doing a good job. And I think if Chelsea were to finish top four this season, I think that would be seen as a good season for Chelsea. And especially if they get into the knockout stages, a run, at some point into the knockout stages and a finish in the top four would be a good finish. But I just get the sense that some people are skirting over the fact that Chelsea are still all over the place defensively. But they did get away with one, but they know a win in their final game against Lille at home will mean that they will be in the knockout stages of this season's Champions League. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to be looking ahead to the Europa League. We'll be talking a bit more about Wolves later in the hour, Manchester United's trip to Astana, also Arsenal at home against Eintracht Frankfurt, Unai Emery on the brink. Could Arsenal be bringing in Nuno Espirito Santo?
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Obviously, we've had the last two nights of the Champions League. Tonight is the turn of the Losers' Cup, which some may refer to as the Europa League, but I think the Losers' Cup is probably a more apt name for it. Five British sides in action tonight. Obviously, the two Scottish clubs, Celtic, are at home against Rennes in Group E. Rangers make the trip over to Feyenoord in Group G. For the English sides in Group F, to start with, Arsenal play Eintracht Frankfurt. There's been so many stories, not just for days, but for weeks, really, surrounding the future of Unai Emery. He is hanging by the thinnest of threads, and it feels like just a matter of time. It kind of feels like what we had a few weeks ago with Mauricio Pochettino, that in the days and weeks building up to his sacking, there were these stories that were breaking in the papers that his time was coming towards an end, replacements were being lined up. And the similarities are so kind of apparent between these two situations amongst the two North London clubs. And obviously Unai Emery's side take on Eintracht Frankfurt at home. Arsenal are pretty much qualified. They're topping Group F on 10 points. Standard Liège and Eintracht Frankfurt are both on 6 points. But these stories are only persisting as they have begun the process of weighing up potential replacements. It's believed that maybe the only reason why he's kept his job is because of his relationship with Raul Senlehi, who is a very good friend, the head of football, and therefore maybe he's reluctant to allow Unai Emery to go. But so many names are being thrown into the mix. Freddie Ljungberg, who's currently an assistant coach, may be coming in on or may take over on an interim basis. Mikel Arteta, who obviously played for and captained Arsenal during his playing days, who's currently the assistant to Pep Guardiola at Manchester City. Massimiliano Allegri, who's currently on a break, having left Juventus. The big name that's being linked over the last few days is Nuno Espirito Santo from Wolves. He is seemingly shooting up right to the top of the list. We'll be talking to a Wolves guest very, very soon, so it's interesting to get his views on that. And an interesting story that has developed with Unai Emery. He was supposed to be giving a masterclass speech to UCFB Wembley students, but it was cancelled just days before due to comments online being negative towards him. But this could be because he may not be in the job. The indication was the reason why he wouldn't be turning up was because he wouldn't be the Arsenal manager by Friday. It was supposed to be tomorrow, so Friday the 29th. I think the view is that obviously you can have your views on an individual and feel they're not good enough for the job, and social media, you should be entitled to your own view. There is a fine line that you shouldn't cross, that obviously once it starts getting personal, and the suggestion is maybe there are a few taking the mickey out of Unai Emery, that obviously there's banter and there's making light-hearted jokes of things, but I think some of it can get quite personal, and that's not right. And it feels like he's been hounded out. We don't know, but he won't be turning up to that. But he will know that there is serious pressure on him, and there are managers being lined up. In terms of that list, the four sort of seen as being in the frame to take over, as I said, Ljungberg, Espirito Santo, Arteta and Allegri, who would be the best choice out of those? I suppose it ultimately depends on what's the project. What are you aiming to do from this appointment? I think if you're going for the most successful, you quite clearly go for Massimiliano Allegri. The success he's had in Italy with Juventus and AC Milan, he is a proven winner. So if you're going down that line, I think that would be a really good appointment. Obviously, he doesn't have any Premier League experience, but you don't have any Premier League experience until you get given a go. So I think that would probably be the safest option, if you can put it like that. I think Nuno Espirito Santo would be a good appointment as well. I think he's done a terrific job at Wolves. Also, he's managed Rio Ave, Valencia and Porto, and has done a terrific job at Wolves. And they got promoted last season, granted with some players that were far too good for the Championship. But in their first season, they just looked so assured of themselves so quickly. And against the better sides, if anything, that suits them more, playing against better teams. And I think I was surprised that maybe some other clubs, you're thinking Manchester United, when Jose got sacked, that they didn't potentially go after someone like Nuno Espirito Santo. Tottenham maybe considering him as well. I don't think it's a surprise that Arsenal are looking at Nuno Espirito Santo. We'll be getting Rye Hooper's view from the Wolves fancast about that. I'm sure he will be praying that Nuno doesn't make the move to Arsenal. But it feels like Unai Emery is on the edge. And I said this a few days ago, that personally, if you're going to back your manager through the international break, this is the last international break until March that we've just come through. For me, this is possibly the worst time in the season to make the decision. If you're going to make that decision and you're doubting whether Unai Emery is your man and considering other options, the time to do that was actually when Tottenham made the decision a week ago. That was your time to do it during the international break, which gives you a little bit more time ahead of what's a very busy period. If Arsenal sack Unai Emery in a week's time, they are doing it at the busiest part of the season. And I wouldn't really understand why you'd do that. There is quite clearly something that's not quite right at Arsenal. The players are not happy. They feel like they've downed tools, which is never something that I like to see, is a group of players deciding that the manager's not for them, so they decide to stop playing to get the manager sat. That's unacceptable, because you're being paid to play for that club. You're not necessarily being paid to play under the manager. You're paid to play for the club. And that's not right. But I look at Arsenal, I don't think they're any better. If anything, they're slightly worse than the final days of Arsene Wenger's reign. So it feels like Unai Emery is on the brink. And if Arsenal were to slip up tonight against Eintracht Frankfurt, it feels like it could be goodbye, Unai. So as I mentioned, Wolves are playing Sporting Braga in Group K. We'll be talking, as I mentioned, to Rye Hooper later in the hour. And in Group L, over in cold Kazakhstan, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away, literally the other side of the world, even though it's in a European competition, Manchester United are over in Astana. It's quite cold, I think, is the message we're getting. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's taking a very young group out there. A lot of experienced players have been left behind. So some very young players. It's a very young expected squad. It's an average age of 22. And that's with Lee Grant in goal, who's about 36, 37 years old. Looking ahead to that game on The Breakfast Show, they were joined by former Manchester United midfielder Ben Thornley. He was giving his views on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the manager, whether he'll be panicking at the prospect of Mauricio Pochettino becoming available. But they first started asking him about a couple of senior players that had been linked with moves away, Nemanja Matic and Paul Pogba.
Nemanja Matic, I think it's been well documented that he will leave the club. You would have thought that he would have had multiple game time during the course of the season with the injuries that we've had to, you know, none other than Paul Pogba, just to give that midfield some experience. But it's not happened, and I think he's probably going to be looking to move on. He's not been involved in any of the squads, never mind the starting lineups for the last couple of months. So it will be of no surprise to me if he moves on. And I don't know about Paul Pogba. The injury that he's had has obviously kept him out for a while. I'm hoping that he's not, you know, that he isn't dragging out an injury so that he can leave in January, because we need top quality players at Manchester United, and he is definitely one of those. And if we can get the head on him that says, you know, you are a Manchester United player and we value you and you can be the difference, then of course I would love to see him stay.
Look, absolutely. I mean, you know, the idea of having a full firing Paul Pogba playing in the Premier League is exciting to watch. It's just how often he can do it, maybe. But there we are. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, is he looking over his shoulder a little bit, do you think, now that Poch has left Spurs? Or do you think he's just kind of calm, collected, he's not fazed at all?
Well, I think if you're... when I saw him yesterday and when I've seen him virtually every away game that I do the commentary on, he's always incredibly calm, incredibly smiley, got everything together. I watched his, albeit brief, training session last night. He's very, very hands-on, very thorough, very, very good at communicating. And, you know, a manager, especially at Manchester United and other top clubs, they're always going to be looking over the shoulder if things aren't going wonderfully well. Now, I thought the battling qualities they showed against Sheffield United in the second half were a testament to the way he's gone about things at Manchester United when he first came in, and more recently in the last sort of 5 or 6 weeks. Unfortunately, you get the first sort of 60, 65 minutes, which we haven't seen for a while against Sheffield United, that he is definitely not going to want. And a manager's always going to be, you know, sort of looking over his shoulder if another top manager becomes available. And certainly another top manager that has already been linked with your job. But I have no question whatsoever for me that Ole Gunnar is the right person to take Manchester United forward. We can't keep changing managers. And at the moment, we are still in with a shout in three competitions. Qualifying for the Champions League, the Europa League, the Carabao Cup, four. And obviously the FA Cup when it starts in January. So let's not sort of start debating that too soon. But I do understand it would be it would have been a nervy moment for him, maybe a short time.
That was the former Manchester United midfielder Ben Thornley on The Breakfast Show. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will be very nervous. Every time he goes to bed in the evening, he'll be wondering if that phone call comes saying, Ole, you're gone. Because Mauricio Pochettino is now free. And Manchester United have been kind of touted as a long-term interest in Mauricio Pochettino. And the compensation was one of the big stumbling blocks. Well, you don't need to pay that anymore. And Ole, the reality is you're not a very good manager. Whisper it quietly, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not a very good manager. I know what Rio Ferdinand said back in March. Give him the contract. Put it on the table and make him sign it. Well, that's why Rio Ferdinand is a plonker and he doesn't know what he's talking about. Because guess what? Lo and behold, what happened after that? Manchester United were rubbish and they still are rubbish and they've got a rubbish manager. They're going to be looking for a new one. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not going to be in charge. They keep singing he's at the wheel. I don't think he's going to be at the wheel for much longer. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We're going to continue looking ahead to tonight's Losers Cup. May have to change that once Rise on to talk about Europa League. He may be a bit offended if we call it the Losers Cup. But we're going to be talking Wolves. Will Nuno Espirito Santo be leaving Wolves for Arsenal?
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. One of the English sides in action in the Europa League tonight are Wolves. To talk all things Wolves and dare to say, we are joined by Rye Hooper from the Wolves Fancast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Rye. Before we talk about Nuno Espirito Santo, let's talk about matters on the field. Firstly, in the Premier League last weekend, Wolves won 2-1 away at Bournemouth. Potentially could have been more emphatic considering Bournemouth were down to 10 men for a lot of the game. But Wolves now up to fifth and only 5 or 6 games into the season. People are wondering, are Wolves going to suffer a similar fate to Burnley last season playing in the Europa League? But now they've gone on a great run which sees them up into fifth. You must be quite pleased with how things have turned around from the first 5 or 6 games of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we understood the narrative at the start of the season, as you referred to there, in terms of the second season and also the added schedule that we've got this season with the Europa fixtures. But really, with the players that we had, I was always confident that perhaps a little bit of a sticky start, we could get unstuck and we could find our rhythm. And we have. And as you mentioned there, in terms of the game at the weekend, really, if you're looking at sort of a game on par coming in at half-time, 2-0 was a little bit flattering to Bournemouth. It should have been at least a few more goals for the good. So really good. We're in a really good place. As I'm talking to you now, we're sitting, in the top six in the Premier League, and we're on the verge of going through to the next stages of the Europa League. So as a Wolves fan, really, certainly for me and my generation, and perhaps those, you know, generations prior, we've never had it better, to be honest. So it's a really good place to be, being a Wolves fan right now.
You mentioned, obviously, the Europa League in Group K tonight. Wolves are over in Portugal to take on Sporting Braga. It's a 5-6 kickoff. Wolves in a very good position, not only to qualify, but in theory, if they were to win tonight, they'd go top of the group, 2 points clear of Braga. So a good position. But Wolves did lose to Braga in the first game of the group stages. So Wolves may be a bit wary of the challenge that's ahead of them tonight.
Yeah, I think so. I think that first game, we were probably a little bit naive. It was a classic sort of counter-attack from Braga. They, you know, a team who are a lot more experienced in European competitions than we are. But since that game, as we've spoke about, we've picked up form in the league. We've had some fantastic wins away in Besiktas. So really, where we're at, I mean, obviously with the Portuguese connection, it's kind of a home away from home for many of the players. So we'll be confident. A draw will do the job, I think, absolutely. But to win and to kind of put ourselves in a better ranking position for the next round will be fantastic. So, yeah, at home, we played well against them. But as I say, we were caught on the break. We're actually probably a better side away from home in many ways because of the pace that we've got and because we play on the counter-attack. So that will probably suit us more than it did in the reverse fixture. So, yeah, I'm confident that we can get a win because we're in good form, and with the type of style of play that we've got, that will be conducive to hopefully getting a win.
Talking of the Portuguese connection, we will talk about the elephants in the room, which is Nuno Espírito Santo. But just before that, I see that João Moutinho has signed a new contract until 2022. He's a vastly experienced player at the top level, Champions League football. Considering he was bought for under 10 million, I think it was, a few years ago, that this is such a kind of what a massive coup that was for Wolves. And I'm guessing he's been such a great asset to this squad.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, unbelievably, it was £5 million we brought him from, which was crazy. I suppose the sceptics will allude to the fact with the Jorge Mendes connection that that's enabled us to get a player of his calibre for that relatively modest fee. But we're reaping the benefits. I mean, technically, he's probably the best player I've seen in a Wolves shirt. You know, we all have our cult heroes and we have players who've gone on and will go on to play perhaps more games, you know, in the past. You look at your Steve Balls and so forth. But technically, as you say, with what he's got in his locker in terms of being a European winner, he's won this competition we're in tonight. He's fantastic. He's at a really good stage of his career where he just seems so composed on the ball. I know people listening will know footballers over the years that they've seen who just seem to have a little bit more time than everybody else. And he's one of those players. He's a joy to watch. And delighted that he's continuing with us at this stage in his career, and he's in great form at the moment. Him and Neves are really working well together.
So let's talk about Nuno Espírito Santo. According to the bookies, he is the favourite to replace Unai Emery. He's only been recently installed as a favourite, but a lot of money has come in for him, and many are putting him right at the top of the shortlist to replace Unai Emery. Are you worried by that prospect? Are you thinking there's a genuine chance that over these next few weeks, Nuno could be enticed by the proposition at Arsenal? Or are you sat there thinking, actually, he's got a good project at the moment at Wolves? There's a lot of it's quite unstable at Arsenal at the moment. He wouldn't be encouraged to go and take that now.
No, I think that's it. I think it's the latter. I don't see at this moment in time in his career and also in the cycle of the project that we've got at Wolves right now where he will be tempted. I think in terms of what he has at this football club, he has overall control over transfers, you know, players coming in and out. And I think there's unfinished business that he's got at this club. So absolutely respect that Arsenal are an established Premier League side. You know, as a Premiership track record, then, you know, ours is nowhere near that. But, you know, football is fluid and football changes. And with where we're at now, with the backing that we've got, I think perhaps outside of the Wolves circle, perhaps there's not a recognition that the owners are very, very ambitious. So I think ultimately the answer to that is, with any questions about him going to a bigger club, is to be the bigger club. And what I mean by that is, as long as we grow and continue to be successful, then we'll continue to keep him. So I would say that is probably a little bit further down the line, because I still feel that he probably feels that there's more to be achieved at this club, and he can perhaps get more out of the Wolves position than he would do inheriting the Arsenal side right now.
Wolves goalkeeper Rui Patricio has highlighted how important it is that Wolves keep hold of Nuno Espirito Santo. Would you say he is the main factor? He's been so crucial to what Wolves have done over the last couple of years, not only getting into the Premier League, but now becoming an established side that's now playing Europa League football. Would it have been possible without Nuno? And do you think that, or do you believe there are a whole host of reasons? It's not just Nuno, it's the whole club that's meant they've put themselves in this position from where they were merely 2 years ago.
I think he's the biggest factor. I think there are a number of factors, but I certainly think he's the biggest factor, because whilst we can have the investment and have a board back in, you have to have a manager to implement the team and to make the right tactical decisions and to keep the players happy. So, no, whilst he's not the sole factor, for me, he's the biggest factor. I mean, you know, often when you're successful, they talk about players being touted and your Neves and your Jimenez of this world. And my answer is always, well, the single most important person we need to keep at this football club is Nuno, because ultimately my concern would be if Nuno was to go, then it may see those players that he's convinced to become part of this project here will leave with him. So for me, everything revolves around him, and he's the biggest and the most single factor at this football club that we have to keep hold of. So as a Wolves fan perspective, under no circumstances do we want him to leave, because I wouldn't say he's irreplaceable, but he's been so much a part and he's so much brought into the success we've had over the last 2 years. So, yeah, absolutely. For me, he's the biggest factor to our success, and long may it continue.
In one word then to finish, right, will Nuno Espirito Santo still be Wolves' manager by the 1st of January?
Yes.
Yes, there's a lot of positivity. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Rye. That was Rye Hooper from the Wolves Fancast. Optimistic. And I think he's doing a good job. I think it would be difficult, even though Arsenal are not where they were probably over a decade ago. They're not quite what they were. That would still... I'm sure Nuno would have to consider it. I'm sure he'd have to sit down and think about it, because there's quite clearly a good project going on at Wolves, and they've got some really good players there. You think of Ruben Neves in midfield, who captained Porto in the Champions League at 18 years old. You think of Diogo Jota, who's just broken into the Portuguese setup. Raul Jimenez, who is a lethal goal scorer now in the Premier League. They've got some really good players there that could very easily be playing Champions League football. So I think they're a good position. They're fifth place in the Premier League at the moment. They are on the verge of qualifying for the knockout stage of the Europa League. He is in a good position, but it would be very interesting if Arsenal are serious and they really want to go for Nuno. Would he be enticed by that? Rye's thinking no. He will still be at Wolves by the time that the new year comes around. Just a reminder of the British sides in action. Wolves are over in Portugal to play Sporting Braga in Group K. Over in Group L, Manchester United have made the long trip to Kazakhstan to play Astana. Celtic play Rennes in Group E. Arsenal at home to Eintracht Frankfurt in Group F. And in Group G, Feyenoord host Rangers.
This is Love Sport.